because I stuck at Sears for 10 years, which was probably 9 years longer than I should have.
Once again, to Crazy Comics and Stories, it's me, your charming and delightful, old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the interwebs is Joe Crazy Rider. How you doing today, Joe?
Oh, man, I had this crazy nightmare last night. I was standing out in a field, and I had this huge satellite dish sticking out of my butt, and then there was hundreds of cows and aliens, and I went up on the ship. Scott Baio gave me pink eye.
So you got pink eye.
In both eyes.
So you're sick.
I've been sick since I got back to New Orleans. And God's making me pay for getting those beads.
Well, that's what happens.
Yeah.
See, and me, I have not had a complete day off in 2 weeks. And I will not have a complete day off until Friday, March. Hello?
Nope.
Hello?
As I am. JL2 service. Justice League 2 service. You know, that brings into mind, I did pick up that Justice League number 1.
Yes.
And I screwed up because I meant to buy at the source and Uncle Sven's, a satellite shop. They had the Minnesota cover, obviously, because we're in Minnesota. They picked up a lot of Wisconsin, some Iowa, some North Dakota. That was about it. And then the United States cover. Well, I have this bad habit when I pick up comics is I don't pick up the one on the front. I always go behind and pick up one.
Yeah.
I picked up a Minnesota cover, and on the pile that had the United States flag, I picked what I thought was the United States cover, but I ended up with two Minnesota covers.
Oh.
Fortunately, the guys are pretty cool about it, so I was able to bring it back.
Did they have a Canadian cover?
Of America. Now, I know 90% of the dullards in the United States thinks America means United States. But, yeah, you're right. It's basically Canada all the way down to Argentina, except Guatemala. I refuse to acknowledge Guatemala.
Well, I can understand that. I want the Canadian cover and the Romanian cover.
No, that's Europe.
I don't care.
It's America.
Don't care.
America for the Americans. I know plenty of Native Americans who will back me on this one. At least till they open the casinos. Now they kind of like us.
They like our money.
There is that.
So you legitimately have pink eye.
Yeah, which is odd because I didn't have it since I was 12.
You see, working at the group home, we have residents who get it all the time.
Yeah.
And I have been able to avoid it.
Well,
matter of fact, I have not really gotten sick all winter. So all you people who say that the flu shot doesn't do anything and it's a government conspiracy to kill people and it's full of mercury so that you die of tuna poisoning, you're all wrong. It has kept me from getting sick.
I'm trying to figure out where, you kind of like, where'd you get it from, And one helpful person said, you get it from fecal matter. I'm like, oh, boy, you're a pleasant conversationist. So I let her have my chocolate ice cream, and I went home. But
my next day off will be March 8th.
You know, it's funny.
Unless they call and offer me more overtime, at which point I will say, I'll take the overtime.
I've had more time off being sick, and the sad thing is I need time off from being sick. It just sucks. It's just a head cold, but I mean, it got into my ear. I got an ear infection. They got me on that. I don't know if the pink eye is because of it. It could be. You ever, blow your nose so hard you feel it coming out of your eye? I mean, it's like I'm so congested. I feel like somebody's put a brick in my nose.
So, it's been 2 weeks since our last show.
And we're still waiting for the MCBA Spring Con, Comic Book Carnival, May 18th and 19th.
It's a carnival.
On both days.
Will there be bears on unicycles?
It's hard to say. Rumor has it they're using both levels this year.
Really?
Yeah, I've heard that rumor. I haven't had it confirmed. I did get my dealer packet in the mail, so if you are a dealer and you haven't gotten it, hurry up and drop a quick line to Nick at mncba@aol.com.
And please be like a comic book or a book dealer. I've been watching a lot of crime stories and reading a lot of crime novels. And those dealers, we don't want them.
We might take them.
Yeah, we don't want meth dealers.
Well, yeah, the fairground tends to, you know, they have their own addicting substance, you know, all that deep fried stuff.
But again, you know, if it is a carnival, that means there will be carnies. And if there are carnies, usually it goes to figure.
I got sad news about the con, though.
Oh, sad news, everyone. Sad news.
Yeah. Well, as you know, I'm getting off the road at work.
Yes.
And I haven't been released. My final release date should be the end of this month.
Do you have to go in front of the parole board?
Sounds like it. I know they did ask me to send my government computer back.
Is this the one with the huge crack in it?
No, that's my computer. Now, the government computer
can't switch
them because it's an old Dell. The government basically has like about 800 of these things lying in a warehouse. And they're trying to get them out to people, but the problem is that they have to put certain protocols on there in order for us to access different government computers.
And no porn.
And no Facebook. And no eBay. And no this and no that. But we want to use it for communications. So basically, back when I was in Liberal, Kansas, they sent me a note, and I might have blabbed about this, saying, you know, you have to take a government computer. And I sent a note back saying no. And then I got a note from like one of the big guys, headquarter guys. You're required to have a government computer. Please respond immediately as to why you didn't want it. Well, I'm looking to get off the road in a few months. And, you know, I think it'd be better off given to someone who's going to stay on the road. However, if I have to have it, I will comply. Never got a response from him. So I'm assuming that was good enough. Then I'm finally towards the end of the Kansas City deployment. I get another notice. Your government computer is ready. Please tell us where to send it. And they have a thing at the bottom that says, please check here if you plan to get off the road and don't want the computer. So I checked it, sent it back. And then I got another notice a half hour later. You have to take your government computer. And I went to the bottom, and that particular checkbox had been removed. So I sent the guy a note saying, hey, I'm looking to get off the road. I don't need this. You must take it. All right, send it to me, which sucked because now I had an extra 10 pounds to lug home in a big-ass box. So I got the computer, you know, inventoried it, plugged it in, made sure it worked, put it back in the box, dragged it home, stuck it under my bed, and last week sent it back because they finally said, oh, we need the computer back. So that, my friends, is bureaucracy in action. You know, I've been on the road for 4 years. That's probably the only time I think I've been bureaucrated, where you just couldn't get through to whoever was in charge of this. They were so focused on getting this out that they weren't using common sense. So waste all that government time shipping me a computer, waste government money shipping it back when they could have actually sent it to someone who could have been using it.
Ugh. But just think, you got to carry around 10 pounds of computer.
Well, only when I came home from Kansas. Like I said, I just stuck it under the bed and let it play with the dust mites.
No.
But that's not the sad news.
Uh-oh. Sad news, everyone. Joe?
The sad news.
Hold on. Before you give the sad news, I haven't read any of this week's comics.
Oh,
is Bat-Cow still alive?
Is who?
Bat-Cow.
I'm not saying nothing.
God damn it.
I did have a tasty steak. So it's all vault for business.
Oh, and the crickets laugh at your bat cow killing joke.
It's only because the crickets eat the gristle that I don't eat.
Hey, bat cow is my favorite comic book character.
Anyways, because I am now, wow. I'm going to be transitioning from, you know, the on the road schedule to the Minneapolis schedule. I'm now on their payroll. So I got a call from the training or the scheduling department saying, well, here's your shifts you can choose from. You can have 3:30 a.m. to 11 or 10:30 to 7. Oh, by the way, your days off are Tuesday, Wednesday, which pretty much screws up my schedule for trying to get to SpringCon because I had planned to have those days off already. So it may be a crayless SpringCon.
And you have no time off?
Well, it's not that I have time off. It's just that weekend's already got people with time off.
It's a frightening thought. Yep.
So I'm thinking what I'm going to do is take a little of this discharge, save it, and then just reinfect myself.
Discharge.
So I take a few days. Feeling sick. No, I'll figure something out. There's always somebody looking to trade. Just when I thought I was out, they dragged me back in.
Well, believe it or not, kids, this year's show has sponsors. A new sponsor.
A nude one.
A Kickstarter sponsor.
I love nudity. What? I hope it's a girl.
Well, no.
No?
But they sent us this message.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening. My name is Comic Book Jockey, and I'm with a website called Broken Brush Entertainment, or BBE for short. And we are podcasters, we're video game journalists, we're video producers, we're a community of people. And we put all this stuff out there on our site for you to listen to and you guys to like. You can go to brokenbrushentertainment.com, and actually, you can go to bbe.me.uk, shorter for those of you that don't like to type a lot. And we have all sorts of stuff to offer on there. One of the big things that we have to offer on there on the front page is a video about our Indiegogo campaign that's called The Road to C2E2. What that means to you is we are raising money to make a documentary about C2E2. C2E2 is the Chicago Comic and Entertainment Expo, and it happens once a year in Chicago, Illinois. It's the Midwest San Diego Comic-Con, for those of you that may have never heard of it. It's a very big deal. It's a very awesome event. Last year, there were more than 50,000 people that went through it. And there's a lot of big names there. There's a lot of companies there. There's DC. There's Marvel. There's even some. There's even video game companies. There's promotion for movies that are coming out. It's a giant pop culture convention. And we do pop culture, and that's what our podcasts and our videos and our articles are about on our website. So take a minute. Go to bbe.me.uk and look at our website. Check out what we do and what we have to offer you guys. You can also go to iTunes and search for our podcasts, which are Four Eyed Focus, In the Basement, and Nina's Arena. So be sure to download those, subscribe to them, rate them, review them. You know, every rating and review helps us out. It'll bring us up on those iTunes charts so more people can see what we're all about. And please be sure to go to Indiegogo.com and go to the campaign, The Road to C2E2. And you will see our video, and you'll see what we're all about. You can see that there's the backer rewards we have to offer. Any dollar amount is going to help us, guys. We really appreciate it. It's going to help us make something to give back to you guys. Maybe you can't make it to that convention, or maybe you want to know what it's all about, and you don't live in this Chicagoland area. Well, this way, you can see what it's all about by a professionally done, really great documentary. I have an entire team that's going to be there to make this, and we want to make it as great as we can for our listeners and our site viewers and just us and you, everybody we are a community project, and we want everybody to help us out. So check it out. BBE.me.uk is our website. You can go to Indiegogo.com and go look for the road to C2E2. You guys can see what we want to accomplish. And just thanks again for taking the time to listen. And please, again, check our site. Donate. We would appreciate anything that you guys do. Thanks.
So, yeah, it's a group that's doing a Kickstarter to do a documentary on C2E2, which is the name of the Chicago convention that rose from the ashes of Wizard World Chicago, which I have active hatred for Wizard World conventions.
I'd like to go to one. I've never been to a full-fledged Wizard World.
All I know is that every report I got from older creators was that they all got treated like crap.
Oh, yeah. If you weren't a rock star creator, you were just kind of in the way, which is actually opposite of usually how MCBA works, because Nick is real prone to want to bring people in. I noticed.
I've heard a list of some of the people who have said yes, but I was sworn to secrecy.
Really? Usually Nick says, go ahead and let us blow it.
I didn't get to talk to Nick. Nick did not show up at the professional wrestling event that I went to.
Yeah, I would have gone, but I would have
Big Mike said that I am sworn to secrecy.
Well, if you were, what were some of the names you would say?
That's very tricksy of you.
I know, because I know if I talk to Nick, he'd say, go ahead. He loves it when we blow the exclusive.
Then tell you what, talk to Nick.
Yeah, right, if you can find him. The poor guy's buried under stuff.
Yeah, but you have Wednesdays off. You could go ahead and shop all day long.
For now. I will have Wednesdays off, which would be nice, because then I'll have two things I'll be able to do. I'll be able to still get to the comic book store, and then I'll be able to fire up my eBay sales. Which, just so people know, I haven't done any eBay sales, and I haven't made any progress on the great 2013 comic book reorganization.
Which means you've just been slacking.
No, actually, they're buried. My room right now is filled with Girl Scout cookies. So that goes on until March 7th. So by the end of the week, I'll have my room back, and I can start working on this again.
Yeah, they had some of the Girl Scouts at the grocery store when I went to the food mart over the weekend. And some of the Girl Scouts were doing cheers, but I think somebody needs to talk to them about that cheers need to rhyme. 2, 4, 6, 8. Girl Scout cookies are really awesome. Word.
Scary. I could see you doing that, Corey.
No, I'm not the one who did it. They are.
Oh, I just could see you doing it. 2, 4,
well, you know what?
Awesome.
I can see us plugging our other sponsor and our contact information right here. This here podcast is sponsored by DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best bar none web host in the whole known universe. I know because I've been using it for over 12 years. Anytime I've had a problem, they've been able to help me fix it. And let's face it, I'm not that bright when it comes to fixing crap that's wrong on my computer or anybody else's computer or the internet. DreamHost.com. They have a discount. That's right. If you go to DreamHost.com, put in the code CRAZY, you get $20 off your first year of web hosting. Now, the beautiful thing about DreamHost.com is you can set up whatever you want. They have downloadable software for you to set up a WordPress blog, like we use for the podcast. You can also use a WordPress blog to start a web strip, to start a blog, to do any sort of thing you want. If you want to do a store, they have software for that, and they will help you get it set up. They're actually having a convention later this year where you can meet the people who run DreamHost and other people who have websites at DreamHost. DreamHost.com, the best damn web host in the whole known universe. See how easy it is when we pre-record stuff?
Yeah, kind of boring. You need to re-record every quarter just to keep people excited.
Well, I will every once in a while. I'll switch it up a little.
Or just tell them it's 11 seconds long or whatever, and then they can just fast forward over it.
We don't want them to fast forward through it. We want them to contact us. We're coming up on episode 100. You know that, don't you?
Really?
Yes, the big episode 100. Now, this month is our third anniversary. So at this point, Joe, are you ready?
No, because I have no Twinkies to celebrate.
This show has lasted longer than my marriage did.
Well,
not longer than my divorce book, but longer than my marriage lasted.
Well, on the other side of the coin, it's the 25th MCBA anniversary, and it's also my 25th anniversary. So I've lasted as long as the MCBA has.
There you go.
We're so good. We're like a yin yang.
A reminder to the listeners, no matter where you are, if you're in Antarctica right now, enjoying the summer sun, you've got time to make it up here. If you're in Argentina, which we discussed already today, you've got time. You could hop on a painted burro and ride up through the Central America.
You really don't know enough
for the border Argentina. And come to Minnesota. If you're a hot young thing living in Germany, listening to our voice, my first question is, why the hell are you listening to us? But you have time to get plane tickets and get over here for the 25th annual. Although it used to be Falcon.
Yep.
You know, I'm the one who named it Falcon.
Nope.
And I'm the one who named it the MCBA.
And you're the one who told Stan Lee, make him green and give him purple pants.
No, I'm the one who told Stan Lee, maybe it's time to shave off the mustache.
Excelsior!
He didn't listen.
No.
So, you know, I've been thinking about our Tales from the Shop stories.
Yes.
And we've talked a lot about Big Mike,
mm-hmm.
who I ran into at the...
How's he doing?
He's doing really well.
And his lovely... And
his lovely bride is doing quite well, too.
Yeah.
And there was a wrestler who had not wrestled locally for, I would say, a good 3 years, who actually came up to her in the middle of the match and said, I can't hear you.
I love it.
The minute he said that, I moved away.
You're probably good for your eardrums.
Yes. But, you know, there's one employee we have not talked about.
Which one?
And no, I'm not talking about the employee we found in the back looking through the adult comics.
Or the female that my partner Gruber hired, and I don't recall her ever. I mean, I think I met her once. I still have no idea why Pat hired her, because she left for Colorado like a week later.
Well, Pat was single at the time.
I hire pretty girl to work at comic shop. Ah.
But we had Big Mike and we had Little Mike.
Really? Oh, no, I thought that at the wrestling thing.
No, Little Mike was not there, but I know, you know, there's Big Mike, who was a former bouncer, and then Little Mike, I don't know how he got hired either.
Little Mike was... Or as we call him sometime, the Griff. Little Mike was one of the Image boys. He got attracted to comic books because of the whole Image phase. It was him and another gentleman, I think Kevin. They drove over from Wisconsin, which is like a 20-mile drive. I mean, it's freeway, but it was a long drive. I think we were probably the farthest east comic book shop in the metro. You know, eventually some popped up like south of us and north of us, but nobody farther east. There was a time when Pat and I actually toyed with opening a Hot Comics in Hudson because we had so many people coming in from Wisconsin. We just couldn't figure out.
Cheeseheads hopping the border.
Well, we just couldn't figure out how to staff it, you know, because you know, would we just open Wednesday through Saturday? Would we just, you know, find a little place and just make it so, you know, hey, we're driving your comics over. Here's what you got. Make it an actual comic shop. That may be where we started talking with Mike and Kevin about that they could run it for us. I don't know. My brain's just trying to reorganize. I can't remember the series of events that led to Mike being hired, although I think he was one of the guys. He bought almost every Image comic, and he did it because he was basically, he's a self artist. He doesn't do it for fun or for anybody else. He just draws himself. And I think at that time, a lot of kids were really into the heavy cross-hatching style that the Image guys came, because it was a game changer. I mean, it really revolutionized and it made them rock stars, and it didn't last, but it was just a bit.
Never last.
There were a lot of kids that came in. I mean, we're talking 12 to 15 year old, Mike and Kevin a little older, that came in just because of the Image thing. I mean, you can't underestimate just how big it was, because, you know, we've talked about it in passing. You know, what do you order Wildcats? 300. What do you order Spawn? 300. What do you order in Youngblood? 300. And they sold, you know, towards the end of that year, which I think was 1993 with the Deathmate fiasco, the Rose started coming off. You know, you would suddenly get your Blood Strike or your Strike Blood or your Bloody Strike or your Striking Bloodily, you know, all these different blood variants.
Bloodily Stricken.
Death this, death that, death the others. And it started to drop. You know, the big titles, when they came out, and I think Spawn was the most reliable, which tells you something, and I think Savage Dragon, too, they kind of started wafting down. And by the summer, it was pretty much over. The problem was, is what the Image guys didn't realize, is if you didn't have something coming out, these boys would just drift away. Some would get into other things, like Mike got into other things. Kevin didn't. You know, Kevin would show up. I think he stopped showing up about the time we went, when we expanded the back of the little store. So instead of like an L shape, we actually took over this office that was part of next door. And then we ended up actually having like a rectangular store. And Mike, though, he kept buying comics and he kept coming in. So, and then I'd have to talk with him as to how we offered him the job. I mean, we must have gotten rid of, was that before or after Casey? And,
oh, I don't remember.
I just figured you'd remember because you were there every week anyways.
Yeah, but I didn't even know him as an employee for ages because I was there on Tuesday, so you didn't have him come in on Tuesday.
He would usually show up Wednesday. And we just,
it's like Big Mike. I didn't see Big Mike most of the time because, well, he worked weekends.
Yeah. I know with Mike, his wife was working. I don't remember if it was teaching or nursing. She was in school at the time, and I think he fell into the job, you know, as somebody we liked. He hung out with us. And
he and Butch were close friends, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I miss Butch.
You don't miss Butch. Come back, Butch. I don't even know if he listens to it. As far as I know, Tim is the only guy who actually sees him.
Butch probably hate listens.
Yeah.
Kind of like the way I watch Whitney now. I watch it because I hate it so much that I can't turn away.
But we love you, Butch.
So, another tale from the shop. We might as well just tale from the shop at this time, because that is our most popular feature from the feedback we've gotten. I have learned that, you know, looking over that top 300 graphic novels list, which I'll probably do in a solo podcast since you are utterly uninterested when I bring up such things.
Oh, I'm sorry, what were you talking about?
There are books that they call evergreens.
Now you're talking.
And these evergreens are books that sell all the time.
doesn't, even now, as we speak.
Even now.
They're selling.
Yes. And I know in the book trade, it's usually classics or, but in science fiction, there's, you know, the Tolkien books, they always sell. The Game of Thrones series, it always sells. The David Eddings Belgariad books that I read back in the 80s, those things always sell. In comics, what were the books, the trade paperbacks? Well, we'll start with trade paperbacks. What were the trade paperbacks that no matter how many times you reordered them and got them in, they kept selling?
The ones that came to mind, pretty much ones that are still selling today. Preacher, Sandman, Star Wars. You had to watch out for individual ones like Kingdom Come, Watchmen.
Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah, Dark Knight was another good one, year one. It was always a chore because the amount of, I tried to set up a system with note cards where every time you sold a graphic novel, you pulled a note card, and then I would go through weekly and see which ones had sold, and they had the Diamond order code on it, so I could order them fairly quick. Plus, Diamond was always doing deals. You know, if you order X number of this, you can get this for free, or this has a discount. Marvel was really good at it. I mean, if you wonder why all of a sudden you see a flood of Marvel hardcovers, it's because they're probably giving them to the retailer for $5 so they can sell them at $10. You know, that's always big at cons. You see tons of Marvel hardcovers, and I think they've since throttled back on that, so you probably can't count on finding the latest hardcovers at Marvel. I know the guy running it now is real not keen on keeping an inventory. You know, he's back to that let's sell it out mentality. But it was always a struggle because I could, as fast as they sold, trying to get them back in stock was tough because you could order them right away and then you'd get a shipment like Monday, Tuesday, so you could restock them. You could have them ship with the regular comic shipment. You know, now this was before the internet, eBay, discount comic book service, half price books. So I wasn't worried about people, you know, going buying them at half price. But if I didn't have it, it'd probably run over to this source where they'd run over to Comic College or one of the other hot comics. So very, very few people would take me up on the offer. You know, if you want, I can reorder to have it here in a week or sooner. But I mean, there were times where the amount of comics, the amount of graphic novels that sold, if I reordered them all at that week, it would be more than brand new comics. And we're talking my weekly shipments were like $3,000 to $4,000, depending on how much it was. And so I always had to kind of, I wasn't like one sold, one in. I wasn't able to maintain a perpetual inventory. Always kept my eyes open though for discounts and special deals. Sometimes I defined them at, was it Barnes and Noble? No, Borders had a big, no, it was Barnes and Noble. They used to have a used book section, and I think Barnes and Borders did before they went out. You'd go there. I started to be a guy. He'd just buy these books, read them, and then just go trade them in right away. And it's kind of like, this book just came out last week, and they've got it at half price. I mean, someone paid full price, or maybe it was a retailer somewhere. You know, someone had a special deal. It was crazy. Nowadays, though, like I said, you got more options. You can even download a lot of it, digital download, if you're one of those freaks.
Are you talking to me?
I'm talking to me. I haven't done it with comic books yet, but I may. If I stayed on the road, I was going to get a Kindle. But you know, I do it with music all the time. I hear a song on the radio, I just go download it off iTunes or something. But I just haven't gotten to like downloading stuff on the computer. Maybe it's because my computer screen's got these big black balls on them where the screen used to be.
Yep.
I don't like it. But a Kindle, I see a lot of people reading Kindles at work.
I wouldn't mind one, honestly, because the lighting at night at the group home, they want us to keep the lights turned down. So I have my laptop in the little office where we give medications and stuff. But if I were to sit out anywhere else, the light is so dim that it's okay. I can't see anything. I guess I'm not reading. Now, the other thing, my first observation on the evergreens is DC seems to be really good at their evergreens. I can't think of a single time where Watchmen, Dark Knight, Batman Year One, all the Sandman books, all the Preacher trades haven't been in print.
Except when the movie hit. There was a time they sold so fast they couldn't print them fast enough.
Right. And they actually went to press.
Retailers, you know, pre-ordered a bunch.
They actually, before the movie came out, I heard from Nick that DC printed 1 million copies. And it wasn't enough.
Yeah.
Now, with Marvel, when you think evergreens, what books do you think of? Because there are a few I think of, and I think only one of them has not gone out of print for an extended period of time.
Well, Marvel's.
That's the one that has, it's been out of print from time to time.
Yeah. They come up with a spec. I think they let it go out of print, and then they come up with a 10th anniversary, 15th anniversary, 20th anniversary.
Yeah.
You know, I can't think of anything. You know, I mean, we had a real extensive collection of the Showcase, not Showcase,
Essentials
and Masterworks.
See, when I think the first one that comes to mind is Death of the Phoenix or the Phoenix Saga, but that's currently out of print right now. Or, you know, Marvel's done a really poor job at keeping this stuff in print.
Well, I think they also run into the problem that I've had with DC. I mean, back when I had Crazy Comics, and this was, what, 2004, 2006, I tried to read everything, but I collected certain titles via graphic novels. Teen Titans, I think Outsiders was doing a run. I'm pretty sure there were a few other ones. But since 52, it's like I haven't found the need to go back and pick those stories up.
Right.
And it's also 52 is kind of the same way. It's like, okay, here's volume one of Swamp Thing. Here's volume one of Animal Man. Unless you're keen on keeping up with the storyline, I don't see any reason to buy it. I'm more apt to go pick up a miniseries where I know there's a beginning and end than I am a regular series. I mean, there are regular series that I do pick up via graphic novel. Walking Dead, I've gone back to doing the book forms. Chew, Fables. I'm sure there's a few other ones I'll think of. And then there are some that I like the Essentials. I like the Showcase for older issues. And, you know, I just finally got the rest of my Preacher in hardcover because I know I read those to the point where it'll fall apart. So it's actually worth picking up, you know, the hardcover just for durability. But,
and those are reformatted too, right? They changed the order on where they put the specials and miniseries, if I remember right.
Yeah. So they make sense as you're reading it going along. You know, I've had the Sandman and Bone in hardcover for years. You know, I even bought the big $30 Bone phone book.
Yep, I've got one of those too.
And between me and my daughters, we basically read it to pieces. It's together by duct tape.
And the thing about the big Bone book, I remember the first printing, they said, we're only doing one printing. That's it. That's all. You have to buy it now. And now I think they're up to like the 12th or 13th.
I think he really underestimated just how well it would sell.
Yeah.
And that was before he went color with Scholastic even.
Yep. So, new comics. What new comic, if you screwed up and ordered too many, you know it would eventually have sold out? Because I can think of two comics where no matter how many copies we ordered, eventually we would sell them all. And I want to see if yours are the same that we had that we dealt with.
X-Men was one.
Yep.
And I think Amazing Spider-Man would have been the other.
Yep, those are the two that...
Not the other ones, Web, Spectacular, or the single Spider-Man.
Yep. But Amazing, it didn't matter, it would always sell. And even if there were times at Shinders, I know that they screwed up and we would get like 30 extra because they, you know, would transpose a number or something. Put them on the shelf, you leave them there, they're eventually going to sell. X-Men, same thing. No matter how many copies of the X-Men, eventually they sell. Batman was the same, but I don't know if it kept up after the craze in the late 80s, early 90s. But it seems like Batman, the core title, would always sell. Even, you know, oh, we ordered too many. Leave it up on the shelf another month and they'll sell.
Mm-hmm.
And then back issues. What back issues do you remember? You know, you're always having to restock back issues.
When?
It's always hot.
I know there was one that we kept getting in constantly, and that was always the Superman run. Not
yep.
the death, but afterwards, because a lot of people hung on. Generally, if I got any, like the leading up to Doomsday and the actual death, those sold out pretty quick. And for a while, the price was high and then it came down. But as far as always selling out, it was always a matter of whatever the hell Wizard was pushing that month. You know, if they suddenly decided that Sharktopus was a hot comic, you could be sure every Sharktopus comic I had would sell out.
They did a comic of Sharktopus?
Well, see, it sold out. You didn't even get a chance to see it.
So,
but
how about Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus?
Well, now you're just being silly. But they, the back issues, again, for me and my shop, at least the big one, it was always when I had the big-ass sales coming around, you know, twice a year. That's when we'd sell the majority of the back issues. Otherwise, it was just kind of hit or miss. You know, sometimes a guy would come in and buy an entire run because he could afford it. Sometimes you'd notice, like, oh, my run of She is Wiped Out, or Witchblade was another one. Somebody brought me Witchblade 1 through 20, and it was usually a good seller. One time I got in a bunch of Lone Wolf and Cub, the Dark Horse. I think it was Dark Horse. Or was it First?
First did it as regular comic size. Then Dark Horse did the beautiful little books that were in the same style as the Japanese collections.
Yeah, no, that would have been the first run, and those sold really well, you know. So back issues were weird. Plus, there was always a thing where you would come in and you'd grab a set of books and you'd say, well, these have been here a while. Let's throw them in a quarter box. Then Butch would come in and you'd rifle the quarter box and say, boy, this is a good run. Let's put this up top. I swear you guys moved ROM sets back and forth more times than it was actual ROM comic. Oddly enough, they would sell both times you did it. So
yeah. The series that I remember most at Shinders, no matter how many times, and what we would do is once a month you would go through and they'd have special sheets and you'd go, okay, Spider-Man, we're missing these issues. This book, we're missing these issues. And you'd send the sheets downtown, and in a week or two you'd get a big box full of whatever they had down below the 7th Avenue store to restock. So you'd bag, board, and price it. And you always had to price it at near mint unless it was over $10. If it was over $10, you had to grade it before you priced it. But I don't care how many times we restocked G.I. Joe, you'd always have to get more G.I. Joe. And the book itself was not selling very well at the time. You know, but we sold... At the Eden Prairie store, we sold about 125 X-Men a month. G.I. Joe, we'd sell maybe 15 copies. We'd order 20, and 15 would sell and 5 we'd put in back issue. But then you'd look a month or two later and hop, they're all gone. And I don't know if it's because the G.I. Joe people didn't make it in every month or what. But those first 20 issues of G.I. Joe, we could never keep in. Anytime we got any of them, we'd price them at 1.5 times guide and they'd still be gone in a month. Just gone. Batman was a huge seller at the time. And the problem was that in the late 70s through the 80s, Batman didn't sell real well, so Shinders didn't have very many down in the tombs. So anytime we got to run a Batman, we would pretty much pay guide and then sell them at 2 times guide. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones I remember the most. G.I. Joe just surprised me because it's nobody's buying this new, but you hike the price 50 cents an issue and people are all over it.
You know, the guy to talk to about back issue would have been Big Mike because he just had, I would just like give him $200-$300 and say, go find stuff. And he would come back with stuff we would need. We'd bring it back to the shop and sell. For a while, I thought of setting up something like, they had at, Cheapo Records where they have a big section. These are all new CDs we just got. They're not even organized. And people, you go into Cheapos and you've constantly had that click, 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 click.
Yes.
And people are clicking through the brand new CDs. And eventually in a week, they just keep moving them down. And then the stuff on the end, the guys just put alphabetical. But we'd get these things in, you know, like I said, I know I need to run a Witchblade. I need to run a Spawn. I need to run a Batman, whatever. Or a wizard would say, hey, this is hot this week. So go see if we can't find it. And, Mike just had a way of finding stuff and he had a way of, getting a decent deal on it. You know, I mean, I would look at things and go, oh, I know this is going to sell for $20. So I'll give him at least 10. Mike would be, I got them all for two. So he was more of a wheeler dealer. I don't know how he did it, but every con it would be like, you know, used to be he'd come over and ask, hey, I found a good run for, you know, a couple $100. Other cons, it would just be here. Take $300-$400. Go do it.
Well, we've gotten to the part of the show that is one of the ones I enjoy.
Oh, where IWD teams up with Cartoon Network. Explain to me why this is happening and they're not doing it through DC Comics.
Okay. And what's the book they're selling?
Let's see. Powerpuff Girls, Ben 10, Dexter's Laboratory, Samurai Jack, which I think I'll pick up, Johnny Bravo, and Generator Rex, and many more.
Hey, you want to know why?
Because DC's idiots?
Well, because DC tried selling them, and they didn't sell.
Yeah, they didn't do much with them either.
No, they didn't.
I don't buy that.
And IDW is actually better, I think, at selling the media tie-ins, although they also have lower margins. They're a smaller company. They don't have as much overhead, so they can make a profit on a much lower sales figure. It's also, here's my other guess, and you know, shoot me an email, Joe, and I will look into this. Because the minute we're done recording, I'm going to bed. Because, like I said, it's been 2 weeks since I've had a complete day off, and it'll be another week until I have a complete day off.
I probably will, too. But
so, I imagine that this is stuff that was done for foreign markets. So, DC's already gotten their money out of it, and they're saying, oh, yeah, you want to print this? Sure, whatever.
Unless it wasn't DC's comic. It might have just come from Cartoon Network because they would get licensing fees from IDW, which goes onto their bottom line. Whereas right. In Time Warner, DC probably had to pay Cartoon Network internally for the rights to do it. So remember, Time Warner is a vertical company. They're not like Disney, which is a horizontal company. In other words, Disney has a movie coming up. They're going to get the toys, get the records, get the CDs. They're going to have Marvel do a comic book, and it's all integrated together. Where Time Warner is vertical, it takes a lot to get the other groups organized. And this is all from Straczynski talking Babylon 5 as to why there weren't more books, why there were no comics, why there were no toys. Because it would be like, oh, we got Babylon 5. It's going to be really big. The book division go, never heard of it. And if you couldn't convince or find someone to do it, it wouldn't work. That's why AOL failed so miserably, because Time Warner was too vertical. Everybody has their own fiefdom. They're not thinking, oh, this is all good for Time Warner. They're thinking, I need to know what's good for the book division, the music division, the comic division. So I guess in a way, I've kind of answered my own question, because it makes sense. And DC had nothing to do with it. The Cartoon Network just said, hey, we're licensing this stuff out.
And it looks good.
Which is the opposite of Marvel, because now Marvel's like slowly absorbing all the Disney books.
Right.
And my guess would be, unless Lucasfilm has a long, long-term agreement with Dark Horse, eventually Star Wars will fall back to Disney. You know, just like Universal Studios, all their Marvel theme rides will disappear once the license is up.
But I do know with a lot of Disney books and a lot of, and I don't know if DC still publishes a Looney Tunes book.
They do.
Okay. All that stuff is free for them because they package it for the foreign market where that stuff still sells really well. And then they just reprint it here in the U.S. And it's the same with the Disney. The Disney stuff, especially in like Sweden and Norway and Finland, sells tons of copies. And here in the U.S., a Disney book, if you're lucky, sells 5,000 to 7,000 copies. One thing I would love to see, as we're talking about the Disney Marvel sort of coming together, Fantagraphics is reprinting a lot of the early Carl Barks stuff in these beautiful hardcovers. Isn't it a shame that Marvel's Masterworks can't be reprinting that stuff?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be nice? Marvel Masterwork number 148. Uncle Scrooge issues 1 through 10. But Fantagraphics treats that stuff right.
They do.
Except I don't like their EC reprinting. I'm very glad I have all the EC stuff in hardcover and then also comic size, because they're reprinting it by artist. Here's all the Wally Wood science fiction stuff. Here's all the Harvey Kurtzman war stories. No, I want the comics reprinted. But I'm not in charge, am I, Joe?
Not yet.
Freaking and geeking!
Woohoo! Start with freaking.
We always do.
We want to end on a positive note.
Okay, Joe, what you freaking on?
Well, other than being sick, other than the threat of being furloughed, because, you know, with all this sequestration, if I can even pronounce the bloody word right, they've got their eye, of course, on everything. Now, most of the government agencies have been working knowing this was coming. But now that we're actually doing it, the first thing is I know they have to give me a 30-day notice before I get a furlough. As far as if I get one or not, it's up in the air. I know they'll probably cut overtime and comp time. Will it affect lines at the airport? Probably. But there are plans in place, at least in my airport, you know, to move people around rather than, you know, just let the lines build. And, of course, it's coming up on spring break. But anything that happened would be 30 days away. Me, I'm like, I could use a week off right about now. You know, even if it's unpaid. I just told my wife, you know, we'll just keep the tax return instead of using what we were going to use it for. We'll just, you know, like I said, my goal towards the end of the year is to actually get a store going with our web host so I can start selling all this massive amounts of stuff. The last thing I'm freaking on is previews. I think I'm past the preview habit. I picked one up for January. I looked through it, and for the cost I paid for it, it's not worth my money. You know, nothing I see in it makes me think, I'm losing that. I gotta buy it feeling. The sad part is it makes it tough on the independents because really previews is one of the few channels you're going to get to a vast audience just to show off your stuff. I was reading online where one guy was talking about that, where the markets, the way it's going is if you really like a book, you have to pre-order it. You can't.
I hate that. I hate having to buy stuff without seeing it.
Because there's plenty of times I find things that I pick up just by looking at it, but I probably never would have ordered it.
Yeah.
But that's part of the geeking or the stuff. So I'll wait till we do geeking. Corey, what you freaking on?
What am I freaking on? Well, I spent two of my overnight shifts after I got all my work done reading the Batman Death of the Family.
Oh.
Here's what I'm freaking on. It was a 24-part story. Let me repeat that. It was a 24-part story. And just like the other big DC Batman crossover, and just like the current Green Lantern, I don't even know if it is a crossover, because, boy, it doesn't read like one. You don't know where to go next when you're reading the books without going to the internet and going to a website. Oh, there's the reading order. And, well, 24 issues. The story is maybe big enough for 6. So there's tons and tons and tons of padding. And when I mentioned this on the Comic Geek Speak board, at thecomicforums.com, somebody said, well, you should know only to read the core books. How do I know which ones are the core books? Detective Comics, which you think would be one of the core books in a Batman crossover? Nope, it has these side tangential stories that don't really tie in at all. Meanwhile, Red Hood and the Outlaws and the Teen Titans, you have to read those to understand what's going on. So DC's got to get their shit together on these crossovers, especially when they're doing so many of them. Now, the Justice League Aquaman crossover, I enjoyed.
Yeah, I'll give you that. That was a good one.
But it was written by the same guy. Both series were written by the same guy. But it was what I want from a crossover. Story starts in one book, goes to the other book, goes to the other, back and forth and back and forth. And because Justice League and Aquaman came out the same week, they actually put, you know, at the end of one, for the next part, read Justice League, blah, blah, blah. Or read Aquaman number whatever before reading this story.
Yeah, that always helps. I mean, they did that in...
Put that in your box!
The Rotten, or whatever the Swamp Thing is. That's how I knew I had to pick up Animal Man.
Yeah. I haven't read the Swamp Thing Animal Man crossover because it's been going on forever. But the Green Lantern one. I'm halfway through. I've lost all interest.
I'm hanging in there. The part right now with the first Lantern, I feel I missed something. But
yeah,
you know, it's, we'll see. I'm probably committed to at least Jeff's off it, or whatever his name is.
Jeff Johns, who's leaving with issue 20.
Yep, and that's...
And then they're going to have a completely new creative team on all of the books. So that's what I'm freaking on. DC keeps doing whatever they can to drive me away. I don't get it. I did read on Bleeding Cool, which is a rumor website, that they DC had a big editorial and creative meeting, kind of like how Marvel does every few months. And in it, they did some editorial reshuffling. They changed some of the editorial guidelines. So maybe they're listening to the creators and the fans who are saying, quit the editorial interference, do a better job of letting the fans know what's coming next. But I don't have a lot of faith at this point. When I pick up a DC book, and I tweeted about this, what was it? Teen Titans number 14. It's a 22-page comic, right, Joe?
Mm-hmm.
There were nine full page, splash page, either just fully a splash page or a splash page with one or two other panels on the page. Okay. Here's a big pose drawing and then a couple other panels. And then there was this two or three horrible 2-page spreads that are supposed to be, this is the big fight scene, and you can't tell what's going on. So out of 22 pages, 9 of them were a splash page. And I know a splash page is really cool and people want to own it when they buy original art. But when you're telling a story, it advances the story one single panel. Meanwhile, when we get to geeking, I'll talk about the art over on the books I like and how much different it is. So, geeking. Joe, what are you geeking on? What are you loving?
Well, I got my pile here, and...
You have a pile?
Yeah.
Should you see a doctor?
I read Justice League of America 1, and it's got... I don't know if I'm going to stick with it, but the most interesting character, I think, in the DC universe right now is Martian Manhunter.
I thought it was Vibe.
No, it could be Katana just because she looks good on the cover, although the inside sucks. But I kind of like the way they're running the Martian Manhunter. I mean, he's not the nice Oreo-eating cookie guy we used to know.
Which is a shame.
But he could be. It's just we just don't know a lot about him other than he had a big brouhaha with the Justice League. Somehow he got kicked out of Stormwatch. It happened after I dropped Stormwatch. And now he's shown up in Justice League of America. So, but like I said, I'll look at it, see what happens. I did pick up Guardians of the Galaxy 0.1, mainly because Bendis has it. And Bendis just, you know, for anything Bendis is doing in Marvel, I'm willing to go along with it because I'm hoping the payout will be good a few years down the road. You know, the X-Men stuff is driving me nuts because there's like 5 billion X-Men comics and you're like, well, which one should I follow? Do they even matter? Or are they all just their own little universe? I continue to like Superior Spider-Man. And under the category, what I talked about earlier, I took a chance and I picked up a hardcover from Dark Horse called The Adventures of Superhero Girl by Faith Erin Hicks. And
which is a web comic, by the way.
Essentially the story of a young girl who has Superman type powers, not the current one, but the original one who can, you know, jump certain miles. She has an older brother named Kevin, who of course is much more known than her. And this was just a delightful romp that I just absolutely loved. I mean, a different take on the story. You know, she has problems. Her cape shrinks in the laundry. When Kevin comes, she's, you know, vast inferior to it. It was just, it's one of those stories I kind of read, and I like the quirky stuff. It reminds me of like Love and Capes. It's a different take on the superhero genre. And I just found it fun. And for the hardcover for $16, I thought it was a pretty good value. Speaking of Love and Capes, I just reread issue 6, which I just absolutely love because it has a twist surprise in it. And it's not just what's on the cover because they tell you the child that the main characters are having. I know it's online, but I just like reading it in comic book form. It's just a lot of fun. The last thing that I'm geeking on is I found a Facebook page, which I'm really going to enjoy, called the Ultraverse Archive. And this person's working on trying to get all the covers up of Ultraverse, which would be a help to me. Because the worst part I ever find when I'm looking at a guide is when you find out there's a variant cover and you're like, you have no idea. Do you have the variant cover or do you have the regular cover? You know, this is especially true with some of Green Lantern and Justice League and JSA before 52, because like every issue had a 1 in 10 variant, but on eBay, they all sell the same. So. Speaking one last thing, and this isn't necessarily a geeking, but I did notice the variant covers seem to be changing a bit. If you've
really?
You can't automatically find them on eBay anymore. The whole Mars Attacks versus whoever thing. There were two variants I was interested in getting. The David Sim Cerebus variant and the, what's his name from Bloom County? Burke Breathed. Yeah, I always say that backwards. He did one with Opus. They showed up, they disappeared. There are none on eBay right now. Then there's the Steve Ditko Spider-Man 700 variant. That had to have been a 1 in 200 or 300 variant or something because it's skyward of $500.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's not even new Ditko art.
No, but it's an unused cover that they finally used, and I mean, I can't find it for less than $700. So maybe they finally got the word out. If you're going to make a special variant cover, make it special. Because before it used to be able to just, I'll trade it over to eBay and find it. Not happening. Corey, what you geeking on?
Well, I have a list.
Ooh.
Let's see. Right now, Hawkeye and Daredevil are my two favorite comics.
Here, well said.
I am so happy whenever a new issue shows up. Daredevil, they're dealing with some very serious stuff going on in the book, but it's not the mopey, depressed, dark Daredevil of the last 15 years or so. Not that I hated that, but I like that Mark Waid said, I'm going to do something different with the character.
And you know the other thing? This is just me. I've walked through Hell's Kitchen. It's not that bad. It's not as bad
as
Daredevil makes it to be. It's actually, I was a little apprehensive when I took my Sunday morning stroll from Toys R Us to the USS Intrepid because it was right through Hell's Kitchen. And you get down there. It's the prices of the property in that area are driving the riffraff out. And it's a very nice area of town now. So it's kind of a disconnect between what you see in Daredevil and the way they made that kind of a close sequestered universe and the way it actually is. I don't know if it reflects that in the comic yet because I'm a couple issues behind. I got that tied up with all the Spider-Man comics I've been missing.
Ah. And with both Hawkeye and Daredevil, the art, I love the art because the art tells the story. It's not endless splash pages, but it is innovative, in especially on Hawkeye. And yes, I'm going to call him Hawkeye because it's a joke in the comic. And the writer, Matt Fraction, says that he threw that joke in because that's how his son pronounces it. And anyway, the art in Hawkeye you will have some pages that have 42 to 50 panels. Just little short panels that they're not really cinematic, but you get the feeling of motion and you get the feeling of something moving and really some new and innovative ways of storytelling. And with Daredevil, it really feels a lot like the David Mazzucchelli stuff from Daredevil Born Again and Batman Year One. That really, it's almost a simplistic art style that completely serves the story. You pick that up and you read it, and the art's not as flashy, and it's not as, you know, you can see the striations of every muscle like in that Teen Titans book I pointed out. But I tell you what, read an issue of Daredevil and then try to read an issue of Teen Titans, and the issue of Teen Titans will give you a headache because you'll look at the page and go, I don't know what I'm supposed to look at or what order I'm supposed to read these balloons in. And whereas with those two books in particular, it's effortless to read them. Everything's really, your eye gets led through the book naturally. And the writing is spectacular as well. They're not your standard superhero book, even though on the surface, Daredevil has standard superhero plots. Oh, what's the plot of this issue? Daredevil fights Stilt Man. But it's done in such a way and put together in such a way that you're interested and everything about it feels fresh and new. The core Batman book, Batman, the Scott Snyder book, in that Death of the Family crossover, I really enjoyed it. They made the Joker scary again. And when I went through and read the crossover a second time, I found myself just not even reading anything but the core Batman book. So I'm enjoying Batman. I just wish that editorial would figure out what to do when they do these damn crossovers. We haven't talked about it since it came out. Uncanny X-Men number one by Bendis.
Mm.
Woo, that was fun.
Yeah.
And Joe, you were asking what X-Men books to read. I think if you read All New X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, and X-Factor, that's all you need.
You know, I do have those down. I am reading, I'm going to try the Women X-Men. Going to sound interesting. And that's pretty, I think that might be it, unless, you know, there's, when this Age of Ultron comes up, if it ties into it. I get real big on the, when the crossovers are going on, of getting into the crossover books.
Yeah.
And then of course when it's over, I'm like, why did I do that? But, you know, it's just, they made them a little bit better.
See, I picked up the first issue of Alpha. Alpha was the, in Amazing Spider-Man, Spider-Man's going to get a sidekick. His name is Alpha. And people all lost their minds. Oh, Spider-Man's getting a sidekick. It's the end of the world. It was a, what, three-part story, four-part story? But they're giving the character a spin-off miniseries. And the reason I liked it was in the Spider-Man story, Alpha was a very unlikable character. He was supposed to be unlikable. He had all this massive power, and he misused it, and he was selfish with it, and he didn't dig into Spider-Man's with great power comes great responsibility. In Alpha, it ties in with Superior Spider-Man. And I like where they're going with the character. The first issue, the art was that new sort of Marvel pared down simplistic style that serves the story rather than is really showy. So I enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to where it's going. I don't want this to be all Marvel. So two other books that I got caught up on. Creepy is up to issue 11. It's a quarterly horror anthology that's kind of, okay, this is the modern version of old Creepy magazine. A lot of the, when you get to horror anthologies, there seems to be a point where eventually Joe Lansdale and his brother are writing half the stories. It's at that point. But Joe Lansdale and his brother are really good horror writers. And Eerie, they just started Eerie. I think the second issue is the one I picked up. Haven't found the first issue yet. But I like a good anthology book, and these are two really good anthology books. They're black and white, big, thick books for your money. And then the last thing I read that I enjoyed was a Harvey Pekar book that I didn't even know existed called Ego and Hubris. And most of Harvey Pekar's work is autobiographical. This is a biography of someone that Harvey met. Someone who was highly intelligent, but also sort of knew that he was the smartest guy in the room and treated everybody else as if they were idiots. And took great pleasure in destroying them intellectually. The lead character is, horribly unlikable. But the way Pekar tells the story and the story itself, it's really interesting in that you get it from that person's point of view, and he doesn't understand why he doesn't fit in. Yet, as you, as an observer, see his life, it's like, oh man, I'm amazed this guy knows, can have a conversation with anyone without them punching him in the face. To steal a Mike Johnson line. I think it came out in 2011, so it came out posthumously, came out after Harvey Pekar passed away. And the art is by Gary Dumm, D-U-M-M, who worked with Pekar on American Splendor all the way back when it was an underground book in the 70s. So I'm a big fan of Harvey Pekar. Joe, I don't know if you were a fan or not, but any new Harvey Pekar makes me happy.
I have some of his stuff, and if I find it, I definitely like. I have enjoyed it.
So that's what I'm geeking on.
So what are you looking forward to coming up?
Comic-wise, I'm really excited about Age of Ultron.
Oh, me too. I'm already geeking at that one.
Dark Horse is reprinting a lot of older stuff in their archives that you can't get anywhere else. And it's, I gotta start sending out resumes again if I ever get days off. But their archive selections, I really am excited about. They're doing Crime Does Not Pay, which I'm looking forward to reading. Those of you who know your Bronze Age Marvel, George Tuska, Joe, you probably remember him from his run on Iron Man. He worked on Crime Does Not Pay during the late 40s and early 50s. And his art's very different from when it was at Marvel. They're putting out Nexus. You know how they've got the $25, Dark Horse has the $25 books that are smaller than a comic. They run about 500 pages, and they're color. They're putting Nexus out in those. And Mike Barron, who I will be interviewing before these two books come out, Badger and Nexus are both returning later this year.
Neat.
And he sent me some prelim art from Badger, and Badger looks very fun. So those are the things I'm looking forward to. Well, and the Star Trek movie. I want to see the Star Trek movie right now.
Yeah.
Joe?
Let's see. Age of Ultron, the Comic-Con. Heck, there's even a toy show this weekend. I'll probably hit just a little do-nothing thing at a mall. You know, it's a free one, so obviously it should be table set up. I just got that mood to go. I might go down to the Fables Con coming up. And still got Walking Dead to catch up on. I haven't watched any since they've come back. Well, I watched the first episode in the mid-season break, after the mid-season break. Doctor Who's coming back at the end of the month.
You know what the cool thing is? You got the Doctor Who premiere Easter Saturday and the Walking Dead finale Easter Sunday.
Yeah. So that'll be fun.
I do have a day off that I know for sure they will not ask me to do because it's WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah.
And Joe's getting the WrestleMania.
Yeah, so. I'm still trying to get the day off, but looks good. And I'll probably do it. For me, the big thing is, I think what I've decided is when I figure The Undertaker is coming. Because that would, if it wasn't, just looking at the lineup they have now, it doesn't really thrill me enough to want to drop 60, 70 bucks on a pay-per-view. But if The Undertaker's there, and if it is him and Punk, that would cement it for me. So just kind of have a fun time with that.
You know, one thing that's made me happy about WrestleMania this year, they haven't had a celebrity tie-in yet.
Oh, yeah. Well, other than Trump.
The celebrity match, that's the match to go and go to the bathroom and get some popcorn and go do something else. And then you come back, oh, the celebrity won. Hooray. Well, cool.
Looking on eBay for, I'm still on a hunt for a platinum Spider-Man. There used to be about 25 to 30 of them you could look at, some bagged, some unbagged. Right now there are two.
Two.
I don't know if anybody, geez, are people putting things on eBay anymore? And if they're not, where are they going?
I don't have any idea. No one tells me anything.
Yeah, we're out of the loop. We're in our own little corner.
Well, kids, believe it or not, you have spent an hour and 20 minutes listening to us blather on about funny books.
Good for you.
And we're going to do it again next week because right now, honest to Pete, I have decided that I'm going to be sleep deprived going into work so that you, our valued, beloved listener, get a new podcast to listen to.
Yeah. And I've only got a few more weekends before my schedule changes, and then it'll be even tougher to try to
Tuesday. Then it'll be I get to go without sleep on Tuesday or Wednesday every week.
Yes. See the sacrifices he's doing for us kids? Don't you feel privileged? I don't either.
Don't you feel like
I couldn't figure an adjective. I blanked.
Don't you feel like you should give us some feedback? You should go to the iTunes and give us a positive review.
Or spread it around.
Or tell your friends. If you hate the show and you hate listening,
yes,
tell your enemies because it's a real shitty thing to do.
I don't think I don't appreciate it.
So thanks for listening. And remember, as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic you like the most. Joe.
Somebody call my mama. Hit my music.
Punk is on a roll. Aye. Punk is on a roll.
Hey, yo. Can somebody call my mama? It's about to get funky up in here.
Yeah!